Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Zebra Stripes Podcast. I'm Coach Gene Clemens, joined as always by my good guy, Coach Whit LeJour. Coach Whit, fresh off of the season and your postseason exodus, how you feeling?
I feel good. This is always a very strange time of year. We had a strong finish to the year, finished third in our conference, won a home playoff game, lost in the semifinals to a strong Brewster team. So we had a positive showing, late season run to the playoffs, including a win in the playoffs. That's terrific. But, you know, when the season ends, it always ends abruptly for everyone except that one team. It's a, you know, little bit of a descent from there. So a little getaway and a little time to chill, always a good thing. But that's the state of affairs here in the LeJour household.
Nice. Everything with the season ends up Like I know you said that you guys were kind of on the college thing, but it's interesting because your season almost mimics perfectly the season down here in Georgia, like the high school basketball season down here in Georgia.
Okay.
Were championships have they already happened, or are they about to happen?
No, they happened last weekend. So
yeah,
I mean,
so similar to here.
Yeah, I think we're pretty close to the Division III college schedule, which still has I think two rounds to go, but Division III and two, but you know, obviously not as big a tournament, so ours gets started and over more quickly.
Yeah. So do you? I know you said it's a strange time of year, you know, right, dealing with, you know, things, the finality of a season, and obviously at a place like BA, it's not like you're bringing anybody back, you know, for round two. How do you feel about the season and everything that entails? Do you think you squeezed as much juice out of the fruit as you could get, or do you think you left a little bit? You left a little bit in the tank.
Well, I mean, I think my answer is going to be a little self-serving, but I would tell you that if you looked at it on balance, that I think we all got a lot out of what we had. You know, just finishing third over the course of the regular season, I put a lot of stock in the regular season conference schedule. These teams are all good, and you know, there's no wins you just chalk up on your schedule. So to finish three out of the nine and get a home seed, I think that's if you had asked me in early January, one of our early pods in January, hey, you're going to finish third, you're going to host a playoff game, you're going to win that, and then you're going to get a chance in the semifinals, I would have signed up for that. We had to have a good January and then had to duplicate. January just put us in position for February, and in February we won some great road games. We lost a couple too, but we won a couple we needed to clinch a home seed. We just want to be a top four team is kind of the deal. Be competitive. We're in the top half, host a playoff game, and then, you know, see what we can do. I think the semifinals, you always want to get by the quarterfinals, semifinals around you want to be in. You know, that gives you a chance. You know, if you can make it through there, obviously now you have a chance to play for a championship, but making the semifinals, I think, is always like one of the is always a good objective. Let's just put it that way. So I think our squeezing was done different times, though. You know, like we had a wild year. I talked to a lot of coaches, different levels had the same thing. So we had wild swings in the way we were playing, both good and bad. We had, you know, swings of scores, lose by dramatic numbers, then turn around and win. So I think we were squeezing, you know, the juice out of us. Sometimes we weren't squeezing at all, seemingly, and then other times we were trying to get everything we could out of the grapefruit.
Absolutely. I remember you talking about, hey, we've got to dominate this homestand. And you guys came out and ran off, I want to say like 4 or 5 in a row, something like that.
It might have been more. You know, I haven't looked at it.
Yeah, I mean, just got on a run, and guys were playing great team basketball, which I know you were happy to see, but you also had some really good individual performances, you know, while that was going on as well. What's the first thing, like, in your world, what's the first thing? Obviously, you're going to be it's getting kids placed, finding homes for everybody that you can find a home from. But besides that, what's the first order of business when it comes to recruitment of the next class? Because I know already this weekend there are showcases happening, you know, all over the country. And so there is no rest for the weary. And so what's next for you, and how you guys do it up at Bridgeton?
Well, I mean, I think it's looking at the guys that we're already in the mix with at different stages and trying to solidify, a number of those guys. And again, I think there's a matrix of, you know, you obviously we're looking for good character guys. I think I've talked about that before. I think it matters, but talented guys, you know, there's financial component to this whole thing. So you're really just trying to figure it out, you know, step by step, if you will. And so right now I'm probably a little bit behind where I have been the last couple of years. I don't know if that's due to my own maybe lack of priority in that regard, or whether it's just the way things have shaken out. But you know, there's never goes the same way in a 1 year market when you're turning over, you know, 15 guys or more. So it's just getting the guys solidified that I have now, and then, you know, moving on to drumming up more interest, which obviously will come as high school guys aren't getting exactly what they want the college level, or maybe college level coaches are calling me about guys that they know are pretty good that maybe they can't take just yet, but a year of prep would do them good. So there's a lot to happen. And I think the college recruiting world is just now, not just COVID, right? But it's because it was going on before COVID, but it has just turned later and later and later, obviously with the transfer portal having a huge impact on that.
So for you, ideal world, is there a particular position? I'm always interested in this. Is there a particular position in an ideal world that you would like to say, if I could get this position locked up early, it makes everything else easier on the road?
I mean, I would tell you this. I think my answer to that is I'd love to have a really good wing or two. If you told me about getting a dynamic player or two at a position, I think it's a wing that's good enough to, you know, to get his own shot and score when you need it. And, you know, maybe he's a, you know, in perfect world, he can defend really good wings too. So I think that if you put a gun to my head, that's what I would tell you. 'Cause I think there's a lot of different point guards that you can get to kind of lead the way. They can be different style point guards, so you got some latitude there. And I think the same thing out of bigs, although it's becoming less true, but I still think you can have bigs that are you know, that play a certain way. It might be, you know, a big rugged kid who can get a lot done near the basket and step out a little bit, or it might be the opposite of that, a shot blocking running rim protector guy. So I think you can be a little, you have a little more latitude. But as you know, the common denominator is, and I think we did this when you were here a long time ago, I just didn't know what we were doing. You know, versatile, the more versatile we were, the better. And mm-hmm. that's when we've had the most success with the most versatile players, which clearly is in vogue today at most levels. So, I mean, I always look for versatility in anyone, and you know, the more they can do, then the better. And the more latitude we have in shaping the team, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So. I just think it's interesting to hear it because I feel like maybe 10 years ago, I might be off by a few years, people would have said, hey, if I could get a good point guard, a real good point guard, or if I could find a really good big early, it kind of sets me on path. And you're now saying that because of the way the game is played, the true legitimate point guard or the big is kind of, because there's so many different versions of it, there's more of that out there than the elite level or the really good wing that could get his own shot slash, you know, all those types of things.
Yeah, you know what's funny? My thinking really solidified in kind of a off, you know, in just a conversation with Jim Calhoun. He was here in 2002 or so and recruiting one of our guys. And so we were just really talking a little basketball, because I always tried to use that opportunity to see what, you know, once I was old enough to not be, you know, to not be too awestruck by some of these guys, you'd want to get their thoughts on things. So we were having a conversation, I remember to this day, and he asked me some questions, and I said, you know what's funny, coach, is, you know, everyone always talks about, you know, the value of the point guard or the big, just like you're saying. I said, but, you know, for me, I feel better when I got wings. And it was great. His eyes lit up, you know, and again, it was really neat. And he said, hey, Whit, Rip Hamilton, you know, name the UConn.
Ray Allen.
He just said, look at the wings, you know, and that's when the light, you know, I just had kind of a hunch that had been my experience. And when I heard him say that, and then that just reinforced my thinking about it. And so I've never, ever forgot that. And, you know, the reality is in prep school too, for me, I'm not over coaching this thing. In 1 year, you're trying to bring things together quickly and do this and do that. So, I mean, I think it stands to reason that, you know, we need, more bang for the buck maybe in that wing position, and then play around some of the others as necessary. But I mean, let's face it, the best teams have a little bit of everything.
Not a bad coach to get a little confirmation from, right?
Oh my goodness, no. I mean, that was, I'll tell you, I remember the conversation this day, and I'd seen him in clinics, but I wasn't, you know, I was one of these guys, I wasn't totally sure, because I had friends at UConn I had friends at New Hampshire, very close friends of this day, that had, you know, Calhoun had smacked around on ESPN, you know, that so I always had a little bit of, I wasn't sure, but he's a tough SOB and a good guy, and certainly he was honest with me, and not, you know, like, it was just a real conversation. So from a coaching standpoint, that made an impact on me. And, you know, yeah, like you said, just you hear that reinforcement from someone that's done it all at the highest level, and you realize you're not as crazy as maybe you think you are every once in a while.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know that the NCAA tournament has started, and many people are tuning into this pod to hear us, you know, talk about the tournament and what's coming, but like, they also tune in because we get into the minutia of this prep thing. And one of the things that I've been really going back and forth about is in this world that we live in with recruiting and how recruiting is done, with the circuits, the travel circuits, and the spring and the summer being the big recruiting areas, it has really diminished, in my opinion, a lot of the high school regular season. I don't know if you feel it the same way in the prep ranks, well, in the private ranks, the private prep ranks, but I know from a high school standpoint, by the time a kid gets to his senior year in a basketball, if that kid doesn't have, you know, a Division I offer, there's probably a good chance that it doesn't matter how good that kid plays, there's not a lot of people going to see it. Not a lot of people going to know what's going on. And so then that forces the young man to almost get back into the circuit as a postgraduate in the or as a about to graduate in the spring and in the summer to try to maybe entice somebody late in the process to grab them up and find a home. With that, how important is the regular high school season?
Well, I mean, here, you know, we discussed it in our text, right? And I think it's an interesting question, but I would say this: it depends on what your definition of important is, or what the use of a high school season truly is. So here's the good. I think there's good news and bad news. One is you're 100% correct that the recruiting has been largely been taken over by the circuit and all the things that are non-high school for the most part, not exclusively. But high school sports, last time I checked, were not about and not exclusively for recruitment of kids to the college level. High school sports are for the experience of high school sports. And you know, recruitment happens through it or not. That's all well and good, but that's not the primary purpose, the reason behind high school sports. And I think maybe people are losing sight of that, possibly parents, kids, other people looking at it. I've said there's a couple ways to go with that, right? I've said for years, you could go the European model and just get rid of high school athletics altogether, which would be a shame, I think, but it might serve kids better to separate church and state, so they know school is for their academics and the clubs are for their athletic aspirations. So I've said that on other podcasts. I think that's a little extreme. I just think people have to get the high school thing back into perspective, and value it for what it is. You know, I've thought this too when I looked at what we were going to talk about tonight. Things change, right? That's the one thing we can all count on. So, but if you asked a high school kid in the middle of his high school season or when he taught, you know, what that experience is no different than it ever was. It's like heroes as football changes, right? As baseball changes, as all the names change and the rules change with it. Young people don't care, like that. You're right. They all debate. They, you know, Jordan versus LeBron versus Steph versus, you know, all these guys. The younger generation. What's going on now is the thing that matters. So my point is, the high school season matters. The prep year matters. Is it as important? Maybe not. Prep school. You know, I've talked to Adam Finkelstein on ESPN. You know, the post-grad athletics is actually down for a lot of reasons. I don't know if it's just more spread out or whether it's actually down in talent. But I said, you know, the reality is the guys that are doing it don't care. They don't care what it was like in 2005 or 1985. They're kind of interested in my stories, but it doesn't matter to them. You know, what matters to them is their experience. So, I think at the end of the day, and I know I'm going long-winded here, but if if we then take that conversation to your last point about, okay, what's it mean for the high school kid in recruitment? That's where a kid and his family has to be really careful and really honest about the where they're at and what another year does in a prep school option or two for a JUCO option. You know, are they doing it for good reason? And those reasons don't have to be exclusively athletic, as you know, either. But are they doing it for the right reasons, or are they just, you know, I was talking to Art Liptowski, really long time Division II head coach, Division I assistant, NBA assistant. And I said, you know, hey, I think healthy delusion's good for a young guy. And he said, Whit, I tell our guys, you know, delusion's fine, but fantasy's a problem. So I think that's where that senior you're talking about who's not being recruited but suddenly is better, maybe, right?
Yep.
That kid and family has a serious decision to make about what they're willing to invest in time and resources and what the return might be. Because for a lot of them, look, it nothing's going to change. But for some, it will.
I look at it and I'm concerned. Because I feel like everything with sports is not pitched as the experience of playing high school sports. Everything with sports is pitched as the next level. Right. And I think that because that's become the mantra of so many, the next level, the next level, the next level, that it almost numbs them to the experience, to the high school experience, where they don't realize what they've gone through until it's too late for them to enjoy it. Like until it's gone. I look at my experience as a high school player. I played three sports. I thoroughly enjoyed high school. Like, and it wasn't that I didn't think that I could go to the league or whatever it was. I just was in the moment. But I think that that is because I didn't have people constantly beating down into my head, oh, you can go to the league. You can go to Florida or Florida State. Growing up where I grew up at, you had a few of the doughboys who would take care of you because they knew, okay, this dude's not for the streets. Like, and I've always told people that is something that I really gave credit to a lot of the places where I grew up, where there was all kind of elements everywhere. But there were people who said, yo, this one right here and my brother, like, yo, these two, nah, leave them alone. Hey, we about to go this. No, they're not going. Like, but overall, I didn't have it just constantly being beaten to my head. Hey, you're going to the league, you're going to the league. And I went to everything. I was at five-star camp. I was at Eastern Invitationals. You know, I always joke that I played in the post in the regular season. I played the four and sometimes the five. And in the travel season, I was a point guard. Like I was a 1-2 combo guy, you know, when I went into the travel season. But never was I thinking, was my full thought process only on the next level. And I can't say that's the case now. Like, now it seems as if the only thing that people are thinking about is the next level. And I think it's to the detriment of high school sports. Like, even to the point of not really being concerned about whether or not you, like, how far you go in a playoffs and not being devastated when you, I was devastated when we lost in the playoffs. Like, it just, it was like life was over for a small amount of time, you know? And obviously we get over it fast and we move on to whatever the next thing is. But now I see these kids, they don't even look like phased. So, and I can't say all of them. I don't want to put that on everyone, but I see a lot more kids that don't look phased by losses. They go right to the stat sheet. They go right to what did I do in the game, because they know that they're in their mind, their bigger picture is the next level.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you described that to a T. So I think you're right on the mark. I like everything you said there. Got a little Zen, got a little Phil Jackson Zen in you with staying in the moment. I think that's a problem. I think that's kind of the world a little bit, right? So we all face that. I think it's being sold, obviously, at different stages of development. So youth sports being sold, we can get you there. I know my niece was a very talented soccer player in Texas, and you had to play in the right teams by the time you were 10 to 12 years old for college. And I was like, oh my goodness, God. You know, so high school, you just described, I wonder if how much, and I think they do, I don't ask them this question all the time, but how much of the college guys particularly at the Division I level dealing with, you know, just the idea that the guys are more, you know, are looking at their professional contract, whether that's NBA or overseas. I think it varies, but yeah, it's a little bit of a sad state of affairs, but again, I tell you that, you know, as coaches say, or educators, well, then that's where your role is even more valuable than ever, and absolutely, trying to help guys. I think, like everything else, we can blame social media for some of this, because it's not just people in their ears, right? It's everything they're seeing happen on social media. So that reinforces the idea of next thing. And then that's why I say character, honestly. That's from my selfish standpoint. That's why I talk to you about, in this environment, character, because there are no certainties and guarantees. And if people or if kids or their families don't have the kind of character to know they're, you know, to some degree gambling, taking an educated gamble, you know, and that this thing isn't all about next. Like, don't come to Bridgeton and say, if it's just all what's next, if that's it. I mean, invest in for what it is, and then certainly it's fine to hope and plan and work toward other goals, just like it is in any facet of life. But you know, I think you got to be it's tricky, and you got to be a little bit careful. So that's where I think, as educators and parents and everyone else, that the influences of young people, you just got to try to reach who you can reach. And then if you're me, you just want to avoid any potential problems if you see red flags.
This is, and I'll leave it here, but this is what I'll say. And this is because I know we have a lot of coaches and people that are in the prep ranks that listen, and shout out to all of you that listen, that eat up the nerdy coach stuff that we do here. I really enjoy this part of the podcast, but I just want to tell you all out there, this is why it's so important to me that coaches truly embody being educators. That's why I believe it wholeheartedly. I don't think necessarily you have to be in a classroom in order to be an educator, but I think you have to have an educator's mindset. One of the skills of being a good teacher is learning how to make the classroom enjoyable for people who don't want to be there. I think I teach the most difficult subject to get people to enjoy, because reading and writing is a lot. Reading and writing, when it's not just for enjoyment, is a lot. But I challenge those coaches out there, find ways to make the high school game enjoyable when you're not playing the actual game? Like, what are you doing to make that experience something that they're never going to forget? What are you doing to make that experience something more than just, you know, when the whistle blows? And I think as we continue to invest in ways to bring the experience back of high school, I think we have an opportunity, if not to change the dynamic, just to capture them in that moment and give them things that they can take with them and look back and go, man, I remember when Coach did this. I remember when we did that. And you know, those are stories. Those are tales that will live on forever. And not for nothing, however long that you continue to coach, it becomes something that every class that you graduate can talk about, because you do it consistently with every class, and it builds something that some type of camaraderie that these young men, young women can take with them when they matriculate on to whatever it is they're going to do with the rest of their life. It's been on my mind a lot lately, especially watching these, you know, the seasons end over here and teams not achieve the level that they thought they were going to achieve. You know, there were a lot of teams around in my area that thought they had a chance at a state championship and fell short. Some fell short even before what they were able to achieve the year before. And it just wasn't, in my opinion, just wasn't as much, like, I don't know, just didn't, it didn't feel final. It didn't feel like it had a lot of gravity to it for me. And so I just been thinking about that. And so I appreciate you giving me your thought process on it.
And I'm going to give you one reaction to your, and really a recommendation to your thought, which is tremendous. It's Joe Crispin is the head coach at Rowan College in New Jersey, very competitive D3. So he's got a new video series out that's being put in together in conjunction with Chris Oliver, who's a longtime Canadian coach, but now runs basketball immersion. It's an incredibly good pod and has all sorts of dynamics. He runs clinics. So Joe Crispin, I haven't got it yet, but I, you know, just talks about bringing the joy back to the game, because as a player, he had lost it. I think he played at Penn State, if I'm not mistaken, but, you know, so he's basically, I guess in a nutshell, what you talked about. And as I want to see what he does, because I tread that water of trying to, you know, make it fun, but not all fun, you know, yippee every second, right? It's the challenge, it's the engagement, it's the energy, all of that. And oh, by the way, you know, most of us are trying to win too. So accountability, but I like the, you know, giving them lifelong memories, I mean, for sure. So I'm looking forward at some point here when I'm ready to dive into Joe Crispin, just to see what, you know, kind of what he's doing with his practices. It looks like a very, it looks like an interesting look into what he's doing. So Joe Crispin, Rowan College, look up Chris Oliver basketball immersion. You'll see, you know, it's kind of bringing joy back to the game, but basically exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely. I'll definitely look it up. And it's interesting, because we were talking about staying in the moment. And with that, the moment is the NCAA tournament. And the teams have been selected. I think that it's interesting, because you were on Alabama early.
Woohoo!
You were on Alabama. Not even this year. This is before this year. You were on Alabama.
No, I was on Nate Oates.
You said Nate Oates, and Nate Oates I trust. Very similar to how I used to feel about my guy up in Michigan State that I can't necessarily ride with like I used to ride with because he's just not getting those dudes anymore. But Alabama is the one seed, the overall number one seed in the tournament, and North Carolina is not in the tournament. They are not only are they not in the tournament, they are not going to play in the NIT. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I'm just going to get upset. But I cannot believe that Hubert Davis decided to not play in the NIT. Might I remind you that when Roy Williams took over at UNC, his first season there, they had a lot of success. I believe they won a championship, might have been. First season there. Then they had a little falling off, and they went to the NIT. And I don't remember if they won it or if they made a really deep run to the NIT, but the next year they came out and won a national championship. And the idea that a coach in sports where everyone's trying to prolong the season, I want more opportunities to continue to coach and cultivate this talent that might be coming back next year. I want more opportunities in a sport where that is paramount. This man decided that we're not even going to accept the invitation to the NIT. The arrogance involved, to turn down the NIT as if it's just some throwaway tournament, as if it doesn't have any value, as if we have not seen team after team after team come out of the NIT one season and make deep runs into the NCAA tournament the next season. I don't know how you feel about it, but to me, that is a misstep that if they don't win and win big next year, I'm not saying national championships because a lot of that, there's some luck involved in that. But if they don't win and win big next year, he might be out of a job.
Well, I mean, you know, I'll preface my comments by saying what I always say to you, like, you know, I'm not there. So, you know, it's hard to know for sure. But number one is I agree with you that it's a slap in the face to the NIT and all the other competitive programs that will play and want to play against the best teams in that situation, regardless of how much development, how many seniors you're going to have versus people coming back, all the reasons that you might have for not playing. Your locker room doesn't want to play, I got to assume, right? But no matter what, you know, even good old Blue Blood Kentucky played in several years ago, right, and had to take their lumps with Robert Morris. So, you know, it's the price of admission at that level. So, in addition, I agree with you, it's a misstep, but I also think it's a misstep by the, you know, you're letting the athletic director off the hook. Like, there's no way Hubert Davis makes that decision all by himself. And I'd go so far as to say the president, right, because the president – you know, they can't shield themselves from their, you know, connection to the high major programs, right? So there's everyone is intimately involved. And I would think even if that's what Hubert Davis wanted to do, the AD and or the president and or the head of the boosters would have said, hey, guess what? Number one, we're going because we don't like the look. And then number two, we're going because we're teaching these guys that, you know what, life, this is the cruel lesson, but life doesn't go the way you want all the time, and we're not simply letting you bail. We earned the NIT. Unfortunately, that's exactly what we earned, and now we're going to go try to make the most of it. But to bail on it, I think is a bad look for college basketball. So North Carolina, you know, if I'm the rest of college basketball, I'm booing. I'm giving two thumbs down to North Carolina's decision. And I'm letting the AD and the president know, you know what, we don't appreciate your program turning down that invitation. So I am 100%.
I would never invite them back again.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% agreement.
If I'm the NIT, I would make a public announcement that it does not matter to us what the situation is with North Carolina. If you turn down the NIT, you will never be invited back again.
Right. And I'm just telling you, not because the guy is not a friend of mine, so I don't, right? I'm telling you, it's just, there's no way it's just Hubert Davis. That's all I'm telling you.
Yep. I agree. But who's going to take the arrows?
Well, no, that's why Hubert should have been the smart one here and said, hey, by the way, I, you know, it's not the goal I had for us either, but sometimes things, and you know what, guys, like, this really does stink. This is just didn't come together at all. I mean, it's, you know, it's awful as far as, you know, what could have been the expectations and accomplishments for this team this year, but there's a lot of people in life that are dealt crueler blows than coming up two or three games short, maybe even one game, that Alabama triple overtime game. But, you know, you came up a little short, and so now you go and you play a little more basketball. So, you know, taking your ball and running home is just you know, we were just talking about education. So it's a shameful act, small letters, shameful act, from an educational perspective, in my opinion, too.
I want to read this because it just reeks of arrogance. All season, our focus and goal has been on being the best team we can possibly become and reaching our full potential to give us another opportunity to compete, play for, and win an NCAA championship. Although we no longer have the opportunity and this season wasn't what we hoped for, I want to thank our players and staff for their hard work and love for Carolina basketball. Many factors go into postseason play, and we believe now is the time to focus on moving ahead, preparing for next season, and the opportunity to again compete for ACC and NCAA championships. I'm sorry. What better way to compete? What better way to prepare for an ACC and NCAA championship than to go into a one-and-done tournament? Even if your seniors or the people that are going pro or looking to transfer, I wouldn't give a damn if we only had seven kids that wanted to dress out and go to the NIT. We'll go to the NIT because that, like you said, that is a lesson. Hey, you show up. You yep. show up. And you do the job that you were paid to do. Hubert Davis was paid to coach basketball. There's more basketball to be played. And you, whether it was you and the AD and the president together, which I'm not even doubting. We all know that the name on the door and the face of the program is the one that gets saddled with the blame for anything. You think if they have a bad year next year, And they fire Hubert Davis, they're going to say, hey, we're the ones that told him not to participate in the NIT. No, they're just going to say, thank you for your time, Hubert Davis. We appreciate you. You'll always be a Tar Heel, but we're moving on. And then he'll go down as the second worst coach in the history of North Carolina basketball. That is not what I want for Hubert Davis. But I would not be surprised if that happens.
Well, I don't know about all that, but I agree that it's a very, very regrettable decision.
You know what else was a regrettable decision? Well, no, I shouldn't even say it was a regrettable decision. It was a decision that I went with last year. I said I was no longer on the Gonzaga train. I feel really good about that decision.
Because a lot of people are going the other way, and now that there are no expectations for them,
they are going to get beat by a team they should not get beat by. I have no doubt in my mind that this is what's going to happen. And I'm saying it so that if it happens on the other side, I don't even want to be like the, oh, well, I just said the opposite. Nope. I have no faith in Gonzaga beyond the first, maybe the second round. I think that what they've done this year, they're going to put up a lot of points. It's going to be hard to, like, keep them, from putting up a lot of points. But they don't play any lick of defense. They don't play any defense.
I'll tell you what the problem is. What you've said about Gonzaga, and I don't disagree with you. The problem is, I think you could say something close to the same about a lot of teams like this. I do think, once again, it's another year without a clearly top echelon of say 1 to 3 teams. I've seen people make out like 8 teams that have a legitimate chance, and beyond that, no, you know, and whoever, I forget who it is. I don't think it's Joe Lenardi, but no team outside this guy's 8 has won it like in the past decade or more. I just think there's a lot of teams, and I'll give you one of my favorites where I feel similarly, which is Kansas. And it's not simply because, you know, they're dealing with Coach Self's health issue or nothing like that. They've been vulnerable all year, and they play good and they not so good. And I think they're incredibly beatable, but I think that Purdue, I love Purdue. You know, I talk about Purdue on here all the time. Very vulnerable with the old school Zach Edey at center with young guards. So a number one seed that I think is, you know, very, very vulnerable. And I don't think I'm picking to make the Final Four, which Matt Painter is going to make me look like an idiot, and I probably am. But I guess your argument I'm looking at saying this field is as wide open at more than ever, because I've been saying it forever. I'm still going to bet a lot of chalk, though. That being said, I'm still going to, you know, I'm not getting crazy. I'm trying to figure out where the upsets are for my bracket.
Absolutely. Okay?
Cause there's going to be,
there's going to be
right. And there's going to probably be as many as ever, if not more, but at the end of the day, chalk, and I'm going to say chalk is what top 4, you know, maybe even top 3, but I'm going to stretch it out this year to top 4 seeds are going to get through to the Final Four. I'm not taking anyone outside the top 4. It just doesn't pay.
I am taking 2 of the 4 top seeds to make it to the Final Four, and I haven't decided who's going to beat them, but I don't see Kansas or Purdue in the Final Four. I think it's going to be hard to beat. It's going to be hard to beat Alabama with them essentially having home games.
Like, yeah, I like their draw.
Their draw is beautiful. And Alabama in Birmingham, I might get in the car. I think in the car.
Right. No, and I think they'll likely face Arizona, and Alabama will out Arizona. So they'll play with pace, and they'll play. That's what I haven't done in all these brackets yet. So full disclosure to the listeners. I haven't checked where some of these further later round games are being played, because that ends up being a kind of a tiebreaker for me. Like, I like UConn a ton to advance, and I know I've clearly already said something to make you go away, so now I'm talking to myself, but I like UConn to advance, and I know I'm talking to a bunch of New Englanders that are going to have them too, so I'm not alone. They were really good early in the year. Now they're back into form. But I haven't seen where their, you know, Sweet 16 game is in the West, and where an Elite Eight game, for instance, is. So I need to look at those brackets tomorrow closer than I have so far, with an eye on where some of these regional finals are being played, because I do weigh that into home court advantage.
I am really bullish on Houston.
Me too.
And for the same reason that, you know, I'm usually bullish on a team. They play great defense. They play great defense, but they score better than Virginia scores. Like, to me, that's going to be difficult to beat.
So we're not going to.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We have a Texas regional final then, right? Because I got Houston, Texas in that Midwest final.
Absolutely. I think Houston, Texas roll because Texas plays decent defense. Yep. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to the stifling guards of Houston being able to get up into the grill of those Texas guards and really make life miserable for them. I think Houston marches to the Final Four. I think Alabama marches to the Final Four. And I have not figured out who's going to beat Purdue and who's going to beat Kansas, but I just don't see it. And like you said, it could be Painter and self-staff who make me look silly, but I just don't see it out of Kansas. I don't think they scored the ball well enough this year to make it. And then I think Purdue just allows like their balance, which is normally really, really good with the way they work inside out. I just don't see the same level of balance as I would normally see from Purdue when I've watched them play, which I've seen a lot of their games because they're a good team to bet with. If you're looking to make some coin because they put up points. But I haven't seen the same level of balance. But again, these are the types of situations where people get hot or they finally solidify what they do. You kind of shorten the bench a little bit and they could get on a run. But I feel like they and Kansas are definitely primed to be upset.
So we're in agreement, which is not an everyday, you know, it's not that it never happens, but I don't think we're, you know, I think we built this pod on, you know, black and white and disagreement, you know, but I like Marquette, speaking of hot. So I like Duke and Marquette advancing in the East, you know, overtaking Purdue, and I just haven't decided. You know, it's hard to believe, but this I'm kind of rolling with the John Shire program.
You know what? It pains me to say that I have been more impressed with what John Shire has been able to do than I have with what Hubert Davis has been able to do.
And there was a time when Shaka Smart was the youngest gun, the youngest and the biggest gun in the business. So Shaka Smart has a chance to, with this Marquette team, to make up for some disappointing seasons of late if they should advance pretty far. And I think they've got a chance. So I like both of them getting beyond Purdue, all due respect to Matt Painter, because there's no one any better than him. And then out west where Kansas is going, I mean, I'd be all in on UCLA except for the injury. So that's causing me concern. So I'm all in on UConn. I want to see where that Sweet 16 Elite Eight game is being played and who they face there. But my hunch is I'm gonna go heavy on UConn, if not UCLA. But I like those two more than Kansas.
I definitely like UConn. I want to see which UConn is showing up. Is it the freewheeling, you know, let it fly, pace and space UConn, or is it the dribble the air out the ball around and then try to like find somebody late into the shot clock kind of UConn? I feel like they've Jekyll and Hyde this year, and if they I like the version when they're wide open. I like the throttle wide open for UConn. Make somebody come chase us down. We know that we're gonna get open shots. We're gonna knock down open shots. you're going to have to keep pace with us in order to beat us. You're not winning a game. We're not going to let you win a 50-something to 40-something or a 60-something to 50-something game. You're going to have to score 70-plus points in order to beat us. I think that's the recipe for them to be successful. If they can do that, if they can turn it into that type of game, I think they have a really good opportunity to go far in this, especially with the draw that they have.
If the Hurley family knows anything, it's how to play wide open. So I think absolutely. I think they're going to do that. And I think Danny Hurley's he's a good bench jockey, and he's gonna have those guys ready to go, I think. Hey, question: who's your biggest snub of the tournament? Who didn't get in? And then have you looked at any of your upset specials? I've looked at a couple, but who are the snubs that you've seen? One comes to mind for me, huge snub for me, but got a couple. And then upset specials.
I don't really, like, I don't know. It's so difficult with snubs because I'm like.
I'm going to give you a snub.
Okay, give me your snub. And I'll just say if I agree with it.
Yeah, 23-10 Clemson. Huge snub. Huge snub.
I've heard that.
Yeah, that's with a record that beat NC State three times, twice by 20 points, and the other time in double digits. So NC State gets in, Clemson doesn't. I know all the other metrics about, this and this and this, but, like my good ESPN friend Jay Billis says, like, common sense has got to rule some of this stuff too. Like, who's the better team? The eye test has got to account for something in this analytic-based age we live in. So when 23 wins and you've beaten someone three times by significant margins, that's a tough snub. The other one's Rutgers, my guy Steve Peichel. I wish he got in. I thought they were deserving too. Like, I would have kept Arizona State out. I would have looking quick here. There's somebody else that snuck in there. I would have taken a Rutgers in four. But anyway, those are my two. But Clemson's the big one. I think that's a big snub.
Okay, I like it.
I'm gonna
give you some upset specials because I have some upset specials that I think are gonna be very interesting because they might throw a monkey wrench into who we believe can make a run. All right, you ready for it? So I'm going to give you one that's a long shot, and then I'm going to give you a couple that I think are realistic. All right? First long shot, South region, Princeton over Arizona. I don't know if you've watched much of the Tigers this year, but when they are clicking, they are hitting the outside shot. They are really difficult to beat. Beat a really good Yale team with a lot of guys who will be making money to play basketball. They have a big who will most likely be at a big time program next year as a grad transfer who has some ability. And then they've got four guys around them that can knock down threes. And as we know, the three is an ultimate equalizer when it comes to the tournament. They get hot. They keep it close. If it doesn't get out of hand early and they can keep it close, they might have a chance to pull an upset here in the first round on a two seed. Arizona, who I haven't really been like, I don't know if I've been really that impressed with them this year. So,
no, and nothing, and coming from a weak Pac-12. So I love that long shot. I'm kind of disappointed I didn't have that one myself.
Gotcha. Now these two, I guess you could say they're long shots because they're double digit seeds, but VCU over St. Mary's.
That's the lottery pick.
VCU over St. Mary's, and then in the same bracket, what if UConn doesn't come out tough? Old Rick Pitino. Oh, Who knows how to get it done in a tournament better than old Tricky Ricky?
That is Rick absolutely.
Pitino and Iona in that first round. It could be a blowout. It could be a 100% UConn massacre. But if they if those shots aren't falling early, or if Iona's shots are falling, and they and it gets into a strategy game down the stretch. Are you telling me you don't like Pitino over Dan Hurley?
I like that pick again, and I'm a little sensitive to that pick because I got UConn advancing, but that may be their toughest game.
That's what
moving forward.
That's my point. Is do they get it done? Like, do they upset them? Maybe not. But if they push them, that could be the game that allows UConn to lock in and make a deep run. You know, you got to get scared once. There's always that scare game. You gotta come back. If that happens in the first round for them, they might go on a run because the rest of the rest of that bracket just opens up really well for them in what's left. But VCU and Iona, two teams that I think could really put a scare into those teams. St. Mary's is scoring okay, more than they would normally be scoring, but and they play great defense, but VCU has some elements that are going to be really hard to overcome. And I know Jalen DeLoach personally, so I'm really rooting for him down, you know, a 9-1-2 product who made a really smart choice to go to VCU instead of some of the other much bigger programs that were coming after him. He went somewhere where he was allowed to play and continue to flourish his game. You gotta love that about a young man. That type of self-awareness is rare these days.
I think 12-5 is where a lot of the upsets are likely to happen. A very popular pick, which I'm not. I don't know. I don't think I'm gonna make, but it's Drake as a 12 over Miami in the Midwest. It's a pretty popular pick. I'm not betting against Miami, to be honest with you, and Jim Larrañaga because he's
Larrañaga. Yeah. You gotta get your Spanish out there. He became Spanish once he went down to Miami.
Love that. The other 12-5 getting some love is, and I like this one too. Charleston, College of Charleston over San Diego State in the South, and I again the location of that game. Playing a factor hugely to Charleston's advantage, you know, keep it close. And now everyone gets in behind you. And Charleston with 30 wins, is, I think, going to have enough to get by San Diego State. A couple others I got, right? History, does history repeat itself with Furman and UVA? Won't be a 15 seed game, but UVA as a 4 versus a 4, Furman 13. That's going to be in everybody's wheelhouse because Virginia wins close games and conversely loses close games. And Furman's good enough to keep that one close. So I'd rate that Furman-Virginia 4-13 game very similar to your Pitino-UConn game. Like, watch out. Yeah. That's one. I think vulnerable is a 3 to that to UCSB, UCal, Santa Barbara. The Gauchos are legitimate and experienced and all of that. I think Baylor's good, but they're not what Baylor's been. So I think Baylor's vulnerable. And the last one I got is just on the personal note is Utah State, all props out, Bridgeton grad, Z Hamoda, you know, a bench guy, complimentary player for them, and making a good run as a 10 seed. I like their chances because of the way they shoot the ball over Missouri, who Dennis Gates from Cleveland State. I mean, Mizzou's had a great year too, but
I like the over in that game.
Yeah,
I think there's going to be a lot of points in that game.
I think you're right there. I think that would be a smart bet since we're trying to help our friendly bettors out there.
Absolutely. We like people who like to put a couple coins on something, you know, just give them a little something. But, man, it's just so much to dive into, so much. I'm looking forward, by the way, I'm looking forward to getting to the. Did we do it at the Elite Eight last year? Did we do it at the Final Four where we did our confidence picks based off of like criteria? Did we do that at the Final Four?
I think we did the Final Four, and we had it. Yeah, but we have to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna have to bring that back again. That was popular, and we were right. So I mean, when we're right, we should definitely bring it back.
Exactly. Doesn't happen every day.
See if we can be two in a row this year. It'll be interesting. Some different names. There are some coaches who could become superstars in this draw. Some guys with some names who could really put themselves at a different level depending upon how they're able to perform.
Hey, I'll give you one more upset special because my very close friend Bob Cummins has a son Brady on the so this is a personal note on the Colgate team that just, you know, is a 16 seed. I think they face Texas.
Lots of points.
So I'm gonna Matt Langle, talk about rising star. But I know he's got a long term contract at Colgate. But he is just gonna have people coming after him with what he's been doing. So. I'm not sure I'm going to pick that one. Maybe I will because I'll kick myself in the head if I don't. But Colgate will not be an easy out for the Longhorns.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that the lines are out already. I'm just not looking at them.
Yeah.
But some of these normal big spreads that you would take with a one and a two seed, I'm definitely fading those. This year I'm definitely picking the underdog to cover on some of those, even if it's like, you know, late in the game and they're getting beat but they're able to hit a few shots to just stay underneath the number. I think that a few of these that are supposed to be blowouts that Vegas might put in as blowouts aren't going to be blowouts. They're going to be maybe like solid wins, like never in jeopardy, but never a 25 to 28 point win like you've seen a lot of the spreads be in the first round.
Hey, final word on someone not in the tournament, but maybe we'll discuss it because I know it's time to wrap things up here. But yep. Jim Boeheim, 47 years, this and that. Odd exit. So what to make kind of an odd retirement, odd exit. But maybe that's his friend. I read some things. His friend, Coach K, had a few things to say publicly about that. That seemed to be mishandled for one reason or another. But another story for another day.
I would love to get into it. And then maybe next pod we get into it a little bit. Because I'm wondering, is some of the blame on Jim Boeheim? Like,
yeah.
He's flirted so much. There's been so much flirting going on.
Yeah.
Very similar to the way Bobby Bowden exited Florida State, where wasn't flirted with retirement, flirted with retirement. They put a coach and waiting in place. He wanted another year and they were like, nah, we're good. Maybe there's something to be said about, hey, you got to know when it's time to, you know, to put the whistle away.
Yeah, I think you're right. So maybe we can include that as part of a comings and goings segment next week.
Comings and goings. I like it.
Comings and goings. And, hopefully we're going to get this one out to the loyal listeners before Wednesday, if we can.
We'll have this out to them. We'll have this out to them on Monday night. So
they'll
be able to get this good work or in time enough before the first four begins. So it'll be good.
Trust your instincts. So trust your instincts. It's always the toughest part of it. Just like a golf swing, trust your instincts. But
absolutely.
Anyway.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been another episode of the Zebra Strikes Podcast, season 2, episode 9. I don't even know if we said that at the beginning, episode 9, but it doesn't matter because I can hear you. I can hear you. And I really appreciate this, Coach Gene Clemens, along with Coach Whit LaJour. Make sure that if you are betting, you bet responsibly, and all that jazz. Don't put your mortgage on anything. And have some fun with the tournament. Like, don't be so serious about it. If you have a team in, have some fun. Get together with some buddies. Get together with some girls, some ladies. Some girls. Get together with some ladies and you know, enjoy yourself. It should be a fun ride. Until next time, y'all have a great one.